Being black doesn't mean anything if you don't.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. And opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good afternoon and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name, of course, is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind what I call the enemy lines of USA Inc. Been broadcasting since actually 2007, so I mean, the years just fly by, you know, in terms of how long I personally have been engaged in broadcast media, taking advantage of new technology to try to replace something that was lost. And certainly I've talked about before we even mention it in the Black Talk Media Project's crowdfunding black media campaign, how we lost terrestrial radio stations, and we can tie that or point directly to legislation that it's intended to put 95%, if not, well, I'm sure they were shooting for 100%, but six corporations control 95% of all media globally, not just here in the United States, but globally. So personally, you know, that's how long I've been engaged in trying to provide an alternative, and certainly I'm not alone. Many other people that I know personally and have worked with and assisted them have also been providing the masses with an alternative brand of media for a number of years, and I certainly appreciate their efforts. Today's date is May 12th, 2016. It's a Thursday afternoon, just one day removed from the weekend. I hope that your week has been productive and positive things have been happening in your world, but you know, sometimes in order to make positive things happen, we had to plant the seeds, we had to toil the ground, and then only then can we collect the fruit. So you know, there are so many different ways that we could look at various social ills in our community, and you know, how do we respond to address them, because these problems are not just going to go away on their own. I don't care how much we pray, I don't care how much we meditate, if we're not willing to be the beings on this planet that's going to make that change happen, then it's not going to get done. It's not even spiritually correct. It's not historically correct. It takes individuals forming a collective to change the direction or energy. So we're going to talk about, we're going to bring back Brother Kwabena Rasuli, who represents Clear the Airways Project, which is seeking to remove music that inspires crime from the commercial airways. So they have an event coming up, and we're going to talk to him just shortly. Also want to overall look at mind control, particularly mind control through music. Do you think that's possible? Do you believe that people's minds, not everybody, everybody's not susceptible to all the external weapons that are wielded against humankind. Everybody's not assessed. Some are more susceptible than others, and it's music. It's music, and more specifically the lyrical content, the words and the ideals and the emotions and the vibrations that this music is creating and being pumped through millions of speakers. Can it have a positive or a negative impact? I've done the research, again, been interested in studying media's impact on the masses, more specifically the minds of the masses, since, you know, 2008, inspired by Malcolm X to investigate whether or not he is correct in stating that media is the most powerful entity on the face of the planet. So it has to be some mind control involved in that. So, you know, I want to throw that out there. You know, do you believe that's possible? Do you believe that's what's going on? Or you believe that, you know, it's not possible? You take the opposite view. All right. Also, today, you may not have known by paying attention to social media. I haven't even turned on the television to check corporate media, so I can't say about CNN, MSNBC. But today marks the first day of the Poor People's Campaign that Dr. King was working on, and they occupied Washington, D.C. in 1968 on this date for over a month to bring the plight of the poor to the decision makers, the policy makers in Washington, D.C., the Poor People's Campaign. And they had a Poor People's March. But of course, Dr. King was assassinated. So we do want to take a listen again to Dr. King talking about this march as he toured the South and talked to people living in poverty, because certainly this is a issue today. It's a issue today. So, you know, that's something that Dr. King was working on, and others were claiming to pick up the mantle. And sure, Lyndon Johnson, CEO of USA back then, claimed to create a war on poverty. But what we see now today is a war on the poor. And there are so many ways that they wage a war on the poor. So in remembrance of Dr. King, in remembrance of those activists who kicked off their Occupy movement in Washington, D.C. To address the issue of widespread poverty. So definitely want to recognize that 48th anniversary. So let's go ahead and get Mr. Kwabena Rasuli on the line. I actually a little late calling him, but let me bring him in. I'm sure he understands.
Hey, brother.
Peace to you, Brother Kwabena. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. Appreciate your patience as I'm a little late calling.
No problem, man. Good. I was listening online myself, so cool.
All right. Well, welcome. Welcome back to the program. I don't know. This might be your third, fourth time. I've been knowing you for some years, admiring your work from, you know, afar down here in North Carolina. And I certainly support, you know, your efforts and all of the other activists who are associated with Clear the Airways project. I actually came across some of those older interviews, as when I posted today's promo, our website will serve up related content, and it served up an interview you did with us on this program back in 2013 about this very issue, bro. And, you know,
oh, really, I would like to check that one up back to 13. And it's so sad that we're still fighting it, huh?
I was just about to state that. But for those who are new to Black Talk Radio Network, to those who may not have heard of Clear the Airways Project, tell them a little bit about yourself, your motivation to, you know, get involved in cleaning up the public or commercial airwaves and the project, how old it is, and you know, some of the things that y'all have upcoming, because you have an event coming up, another demonstration, occupation of another corporation that is sponsoring the murder music that we see in these communities. So please introduce yourself and speak on those topics.
My name is Kwabena Razuli, again with the Clear the Airways Project, and basically, man, it's just the love for music that I've had for I don't know how long, and the love for hip-hop music, and just hardly not being able to fathom that we would allow our music to get to the point where every time our children turn the radio on, they're being called in, and that their mothers and daughters and sisters are being called B's and H's 80% of the time they turn the radio on. And we feel that it leads to a lot of the fratricide that's going on all around the country in areas where Africans live. You know, I'm in the Chicagoland area. I'm in Gary. And, you know, we had 48 people shot during Mother's Day weekend. And we've already had, it's like 10 people getting shot a day in the Chicago area. 10 people a day, and the vast majority of them, Scotty, look like you and I. So it's, and we equate a lot of this to the music. Music is culture, and culture is defined as a people's way of life. If your music is constantly telling you that you are in, that's a license to kill. That's a license to dehumanize. If they're calling your mama or your daughter or your girlfriend a BRH, then individually we don't allow people to talk to our women folk like that. And there's always contention and confrontation when that occurs. And that's a lot of it that occurs too. So we're saying stop it. You don't do it on these other stations, so don't do it on stations that target our people. And that's what we are. We knew, like you said, you got a rap we did from 2013. We've been at this for quite a while now. And we're saying that by the end of 2016, we want it off the air. We're not going to try to go any further with it. And so we're calling on people. We're calling on other warriors, other people to join us in this fight to get this crap off the radio. We can do it. We must do it. And so we're just calling on the people. We need help.
Now, one of the things one of the areas I would like to focus on, because today, as you said, you were listening prior to coming on air live with us. So I assume you heard that today is the 48th anniversary of the kickoff of the campaign and the march against poverty. Again, that was on May the 12th, 1968. Dr. King, of course, you know, spearheaded that, but he was assassinated prior to that. So the reason I'm bringing up poverty is you said that we believe that, you know, the music programming plays a lot, plays a huge role in the poverty. But at the same time, you know, I feel like there are other factors, like poverty itself, when there's a lack of jobs, lack of resources, lack of opportunities in those communities. But then you factor in that you are programming people with these negative thoughts that lead, scientifically have been shown, if you plant thoughts in a person, man, that leads to you know, if it's a negative thought, negative behaviors, you plant that in their minds, you know, it leads to negative speech, thought, and action. Or I should say thought, then speech, and possibly action. So I know we're not blaming the music industry entirely for poverty and associated violence, but at the same time, we do have to recognize the role and look at the scientific evidence that supports that very notion that it you know, we could do a study. And I was thinking about this other last night, Brother Kwabena. I wish that the Black Talk Media Project had the funding to award a grant to someone to do a study to correlate the reported violence statistics in certain areas, and then identify or you know, include what the media programming is in that area. What type of music, what type of radio station, what's the programming, you know, and can we find a correlation between violence and music? Again, recognizing that there are many factors that lead to social ills and whatnot, but me being a student of media, knowing its power, I got to figure, you know.
Man, I got one for you right now.
Okay.
I got one for you right now. Do Better Now which actually is this white preacher, he called him White Mike, out of Jacksonville. I don't know if he went to HBCU or whatever, but I think he may have went to one out in Atlanta, somewhere in Atlanta. But he's out there. He has this group, and his church, I think, is multiracial, but they've been dealing with this music piece for a minute. And in 2013, they did a study of Clear Channel, and they saw where Clear Channel, they would give one sexually explicit reference on their station in the Clear Channel in Chicago, Kiss FM, every time they give 25 sexually explicit references on WGCI. Now, Kiss targets young white folks. WGCI targets young Africans. So it was a 25-to-1 ratio of sexually explicit stuff on a young station for young African children as compared to young white children. When it came to violence, they would get one violent reference per 50 that we got. One per 50, brother. And so when you look at the murder statistics in Chicago for the year 2013, there were 420-something murders. And I think it was like either 12 or 18 white. Basically, so that percentage was 98% were other than European of the murders in Chicago in 2013. That correlates directly to the percentage of violent references that are on the station that targets their African listeners as compared to their white listeners. See, Clear Channel owns 8 stations in Chicago. And so that's one right there is direct reference, a 50-to-1 ratio.
Well, you know, mentioned
so if you had 48 to 2, that's 100. That's 98%, and that's 98% of the murders are other than white folks that took place in 2013. So that's a stat that goes right along with what they're doing.
You know, you mentioned that Clear Channel owns 8 stations. Interestingly, that's the limit that any corporation or entity can own in one market. And that was passed in the 1996 Telecommunication Act with Republicans working with the Democrats to pass this legislation, which led to the death of terrestrial black radio. And so I just thought that was interesting. Let me ask you this, though. Do you think that this is all a coincidence, or do you think that there is actually a social programming operation going on to get people to act in a genocidal, self-genocidal ways, or self-suicidal, harming themselves as a people? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I believe your second premise is what it is. It's obvious, because they always talk about making more money, but they made money with conscious music, or with just music that was not talking about killing people. So they can still make money. It's about programming. If you hear these songs 4 and 5 times a day, and they play them 15 and 20 times a day, you'll get used to them and you may start liking them. So they know exactly what they're doing in terms of programming us with this fratricidal, decadent, toxic music. They know exactly what they're doing. We've talked to them all. I want to get back to the point about Dr. King, that anniversary. And I think it's kind of relevant to something that we saw last night. Our comrade Fred Hampton Jr., Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., posted something last night about a shooting in Chicago where 4 people were shot on 71st and State at a bus stop. And so he posted like the news report. The news report showed the reporter that was white, showed the shop owners that were not African. I think they were Arab or something, a couple shop owners that were there. All the police they showed were white. And I thought about, okay, This is an example of the economic issues. Now, when we see all these people who are there working and making money, were not African. But I guarantee you, in more cases than not, the perpetrator and the victims of those shootings were all African. And so that goes into the economic aspect of the crime and the violence that occurs. And that's what we're dealing with in Chicago, communities like Gary, and communities all over the country that were suffering like this. And so, no, Dr. King, what he was working on before he was assassinated was correct. And it still plays a role in our conditions today. And plus, Scott, you add to that, another thing that we have is self-hate. Because white folks drink, they got guns, but they're not killing each other to the extent that we are, because they don't have the self-hate that we have that's been ingrained in us. And like I said earlier, 90% of the songs, I mean, every time my children turn the radio on, they're not being called the N-word in one line on the song. They're being called, N-bombs are being dropped on them like they dropped them bombs on Libya, man. on Tripoli.
Now let's talk about some solutions right quick in the little time we have left with you. There's an event that Clear the Airwaves is sponsoring, organized in Gary, Indiana. I think it's this weekend. And if I understand it, the tactic, well, I do understand it because, you know, we've long supported your efforts and putting the spotlight on the businesses that sponsor the murder music. You know, these corporations like McDonald's, Walmart, and they'll put their family-friendly commercials on TV and on the radio, but they are subsidizing, you know, this foul music. And I was thinking about this, Brother Kwabena, and then please give us the details on the upcoming event. I was like, you know what? Y'all should make a CD of, let's say, 12-hour playlists of whatever the Murder Music Corporation station is in that area. Then take it to the franchise owner and manager of whatever corporation that's advertising on these murder music stations and ask them if they would play that, you know, over their in-store speakers. Would they subject their customers to this sort of language? Would McDonald's be playing, you know, Chief Keef talking about killing somebody or whatnot? I mean, well, give us some your thoughts on that and then the event details before you leave us.
I wrote that down. That's a good idea. Just in the event details, man, is that we're having our informational demonstration of Picket at a McDonald's franchise in Gary on the corner of 35th and Grant Street. And our thing is, we said, stop sponsoring murder music. And so that's at 10:30 this Saturday morning, 10:30 to noon, that we're going to be out there, again, just putting pressure on people not to support them since they don't support us. And it's time to stop it. But we have four things that we call on people to do this year in order for us to end this crap. And we want the people to, number one, monitor what your children are listening to. And then once you hear the vile and vulgar content, file a complaint with the FCC. And if you can't understand it, ask the children. They'll tell you what it is. They tell me a lot about what it is. And file a complaint. We have successes of really getting fines on them and even some stations shutting down. We have comrades out of the Philly, Delaware area called Rage Against the Ratchet. They've been on this campaign. So file a complaint was one thing. Second thing we asked them to do is we asked them to stop patronizing the businesses like we're doing now that support this crap. And don't just stop patronizing them. Let them know why. Let them know why you're not doing it. And then we say call the stations. Call the stations and complain to them and let them know that it's not, you know, right for them to be doing that. So, I mean, so there's ways that we can do it. And I want to say also, Scotty, that no other race would accept this crap. No other race. And so we should not accept it. And it doesn't take much. We had a meeting with our head, name was Matt Scazzano, and Angela Ingram. They're two executives at Clear Channel, or iHeart, what they call it now, the Midwest area, Chicago area. We had a meeting with them, and we asked them four times to stop playing music that promotes violence and disrespect. And four times they told us no, they would not stop playing it. And they never denied that the music that they're playing leads to a lot of the issues that are taking place in this community. But they said they would not stop doing it. We even asked them, why don't you guys do this then? Why don't you just at least for the month of April, maybe do a moratorium on any type of media that talks about gunplay and shooting and killing people. Oh, a good idea. We'll let you know. Never heard back from them. So they don't care about us. That was iHeart, not a Crawford Broadcasting Station, which is worse, Power 92.3. They don't even call us back. But the people, if the people, when we're asking the people again to come on out there with us, we can really make a difference in ending this crap.
Yeah, I certainly appreciate your efforts. I agree with them tactics. I mean, even disrupting their businesses electronically. Well, if you a car dealership and you're running ads on, you know, murder music station, therefore supporting that programming for that community, and to the point you're not even willing to run their playlist on your radio within your showroom, you know, and whatnot. So if you tie up their telephone lines, you know what I'm saying, and everybody's complaining and telling them the reason why, because you support violence, you support misogyny, you support the use of the N-words on the local radio that is that has invaded the airways of our community. And one last point, Brother Quabena, and then tell people how they can connect with you online. We hear Hillary Clinton and other politicians talking about passing legislation that would allow the victims and the family members of victims of gun violence to be able to sue the gun makers. You know, I think there we could prove a more cause and effect with the makers of murder music than you could there. But I don't hear anybody talking about legislation to hold, you know, these people accountable for the negativity and the incorrect thoughts and speech and action that they're promoting in our community. How can people connect with Clear the Airways Project online? Are there opportunities for people in their community to start a chapter and become part of a national movement? Tell us that before you leave.
Yeah, work with us. You can work with us to do that. Best way to check us out is on Facebook, Clear the Airways Project. And again, those four things that we want people to do is listen and complain, call the stations, write the stations, and work with, like you just mentioned, support the joint organizations and movements like Rage Against the Ratchet, like CMOTAP, which is a committee to eliminate media offensive to African people, and like Clear the Airways Project, and then put economic sanctions on the business that support that crap. Scott, if I can make one last point about something else I saw last night about this brother that was shot and killed in Chicago, just directing it straight to the music. They had a video of him on his porch, bleeding out, dying. There was a song I heard on the radio on Sicky Smiley's show. They call him Ricky Smiley. We call him Sicky Smiley. The other morning, with two slave chains, a Lil Stain. Well, Lil Stain, y'all call him Lil Wayne, rapped about having you laying on your porch bleeding for your mama to deal with you. And it's the same thing we see him playing out, like playing out last night in Chicago. The same thing. And so this is the type of crap that they play, man. That's just nothing, dude. So we gotta put a stop to it, and we can. We just gotta put the energy into it. Again, Clear the Airwaves Project. Check us out on Facebook. And again, this weekend we're at the McDonald's on Grant Street in Chicago, in the Gary area, Chicagoland area. So we need the people's support to make this change. No more of this crap in 2016. We gotta put an end to it.
Thank you, Brother Quabena, and I hope y'all have a successful demonstration and the community really turns out to send a message to the corporations that are sponsoring this propaganda mind control, directing it at our communities. Because like you said, you know, you tune in to non-black stations, and they're not being filled with that type of programming. Peace and blessings to you, brother. Again, be safe out there.
You too, brother. I appreciate you, man. Appreciate what you're doing, man, with Black Talk Radio, man, and we'll be continue to spread the word.
All right. We'll talk. Peace.
All right. Well,
All right. That was Quabena Rasuli with Clear the Airways Project. Again, they have another demonstration that's coming up. We've linked to it on our broadcast page for today, May 12th, 2016. You can just go to Facebook, Protest McDonald's Commercials on Violent Radio. And you know, that is really what they're doing. If these people aren't willing to play those stations, they could just, you know, turn the radio station on and broadcast it throughout the speakers of their department stores, of McDonald's, of their car dealerships, of, you know, restaurants and whatnot. Then if you're not willing to subject people you allegedly care about, you know, people patronizing your business, then why would you sponsor and help support, you know, that same type of music being targeted at young people, no less, but all people, you know, of different ages and whatnot. There's no age limit on, you know, whether or not your mind can be controlled by suggestive messaging in the music. Look, people, I'm not one of those people on here that deals in illogical things. The research has been done. They've known, you know, for probably over 100 years how media can be used to can. That's why they do so many studies on, you know, well, political messaging, ads, whether we're trying to sell you something. All they spend a tremendous amount of money studying the human brain and how it reacts to messaging. They have focus groups, little people they bring in and experiment, and how do they react to this message versus that message? Do we need to tweak the music? Do we need to change the words up? How do we do this? So there is a direct correlation between violence and music. I just would not go as far as to say, and Brother Kwabena wasn't going, you know, that far to say, you know, that it's only the music that's causing violence. No, when you starve people of resources, when there are no jobs and people are out there trying to survive, some people will turn to crime. And so therefore, you know, if you, I've seen the poverty bubble of the United States, huge bubble around Chicago. But then you throw in this music that's being targeted at them, that's telling them to be thugs, to be criminals, to just all sort of negative messaging. Well, you know, that those thoughts get planted in their mind and it leads to that same sort of speech or that same sort of action. So much, their work is much needed. Listen, we're going to take a station identification break, and then on the other side, I want to play this video that talks about the seven secrets of mind control. It's very, very interesting. It's simplistic, and I don't mean to suggest that, you know, it's something simple and everybody be able to grasp it, but there are basic truths or basic techniques that have proven out to work. And so just to get a better understanding of what we're talking about, you know, or have been talking about during this first half hour about mind control through music, you know, we'll take a listen to that. And then we'll jump into our observation of the 48th anniversary the poverty campaign, poor people's campaign that Dr. King started, was not able to finish, was not able to make it to Washington, D.C. and demand our checks because he was assassinated. And the civil lawsuit, a jury determined the United States government played a role in his assassination. So he didn't get to continue his work in addressing the millions upon millions of poor people in this country that are still here today. And, you know, we don't really have a poor people's campaign or a war on poverty. There has been a war on the poor, and we could trace that back going all the way back to the days after Dr. King was assassinated through subsequent administrations. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, broadcasting here on the Black Talk Radio Network on live Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. If you have a question or comment, please don't hesitate to give us a call at 704-951-5030. Get you in on the studio line. And the conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code, of course, is 549-032-POUND. Hit star 6-1 to signal the host. We'll be back on the other side. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
Take back your life. your mind and your soul. They tell us that we're free, but it's all mind control. I said take back your life, your mind and your soul. Out of my mind, cause our life lies so intertwined. You in a box on my side, they got in your mind, but not into mine. Tried warning my peers, but I smell ignorance in the air. These lies getting whispered up in your ears from beings that don't originate here. We under their control, ears and toes only cause we ain't spiritual. Manipulating the generations, got reptilians in our code. No double helix, there's 12 spirals, there's hidden powers in our soul. Magnificent, imbecile, but still no rappers near the cow. Why they look at you as a child, you'll gain my knowledge 5 years from now. Crazy truth coming from the youth, you give them loot while they kill the troops. Civil war, World War II, World War III, now we're 2012, new beginning, but this year I'm so done with you. Taking the number 2 on these MCs till I'm empty. I'm a god MC, y'all damn me. So all I see is envy. Y'all can't see me and I'm a different D. Mention like I smoke DMT. About to blow like TNT, just so they know it's B-E-N-T. I take back your life, your mind and your soul. They tell us that we're free, but it's all mind control. I said take back your life, your mind and your soul. They tell us that we're free, but it's all mind control. I said they can't tell us nothing, they ain't saying nothing relevant. We ain't listening, they can't tell us nothing, they ain't saying nothing relevant. We ain't listening. American life, full of conspiracy theories, money, power, and the celebrity lights. Where we are, but rewarded by law, whether it's wrong or it's right. We're religionists, causing division, debating on all Christ. Why fight about who is right? Maybe we all should unite, put our differences behind. Cause the human race is one of a kind, taking one step at a time. Because over time, our minds will align. Why aren't we heeding the signs? On December 21st, we will survive. The media's feeding us lies, strike a fear into American lives. With the divine, we'll always prevail, and the elite will meet their demise. The battle's not yours, nor mine, so don't mind the war cries. Things look fine in your eyes, only at this point of time. Just know through the hardest times, that's when we will start to shine. If all this vanity that I see is temporary, what's the point of me? Stressing over clothes and PS3s. Honest, I just wanna give the world my knowledge and stress the fact that none of y'all flows are seeing me. I used to stress over being labeled as the hottest, but in this cold world, I'll forever be on freeze. Respect to Hova, but we could be our own gods and goddesses if only the whole world would just get up off their knees. I used to be egotistic and proud affiliated, and a few of those things might just linger in me still. But when I realized it's more to life than being famous, I understood you don't need no record deal, you just need to take back your life, your mind and your soul. They tell us that we're free, but it's all mind control. I said take back your life, your mind and your soul. They tell us that we're free, but it's all mind control. I said they can't tell us nothing, they ain't saying nothing relevant. We ain't listening, they can't tell us nothing, they ain't saying nothing relevant. We ain't listening.
Yeah, that was Kyle Bent, Mind Control, young black man, putting out some positive music. That track is actually like about three years old. And so I played that track to let you know all our youth are not brainwashed. They are not falling susceptible to the mind control, and they are actually engaged in creating their media propaganda to counter that. So, you know, they rather play people who promote negative energy, negative behavior on, you know, the corporate controlled radio, as opposed to giving a Kyle Bent airplay and what have you, because of, you know, there's all collusion between the record companies and the radio stations in determining who gets on air. So again, shout out to the Clear the Airways Project. If you can support them, if you want to join them, even start a chapter where you are to address the local media that is polluting your community airwaves, then certainly get in touch with them. And shout out to Kyle Bent for his contribution with his single Mind Control. All right, want to move on. I said I wanted to play this track. Let me find it for you. It is called The Seven Sneaky Secrets of Mind Control, Mind Manipulation. And there are, again, number of ways to manipulate people's minds through the spoken word, but even also through music. Music can make you violent. It can make you amped up. It can make you, you know, have physical changes to your body's rhythm and you know, respiration and what have you. But, you know, in addition to the language that is being, you know, spoken to your mind. And so, but I want to share this video, then we'll move on to continue recognizing the march, the Poor People's March that took place in Washington, D.C. in 1968. It was really more than a march. It was a month, almost a month and a half occupation of Washington, D.C. by poor people. But unfortunately, Dr. King was not there, as he had just been assassinated the prior month on, I think, April the 4th. So, all right. So this is Mind Manipulation, The Seven Sneaky Secrets. Go ahead and cue that up for you.
Very real. It happens all the time, because it is in fact one of the most powerful ways to control people's thoughts and opinions. There are so many organizations, institutions, corporations and individuals who want to change what you think, because they would get an advantage from it. That is why it is more and more important to familiarize yourself with these mind control techniques so that you are able to recognize them when they are played on you. Here are seven sneaky secrets mind manipulators use to influence other people. 1. Making people trust and like you is easy if you establish similarities. That means that essentially that they somehow create the impression that they are like you. They can do this with a method called pacing, where they mirror your body language, certain expressions that you use, your intonation patterns, and so on. 2. If you give people a reason why they should do something, they are much more inclined to do it. It doesn't even have to be a good reason, any reason will do, because that is the way our minds work. 3. You can secretly hypnotize people in the course of a normal conversation, and they will not even know what is happening. With the use of hypnotic language patterns, you can then implant hypnotic commands into their minds. 4. You can get people to do the most unbelievable things that they would not otherwise do if you just can get them to make a small commitment toward that action first. It is important that you do not try to get them to commit to the big thing first, but instead, just get them to do something that is seemingly irrelevant. This way, you create a kind of psychological momentum that takes on a life of itself. 5. It is more powerful to manipulate their emotions than to argue with logic. Most of the decisions we make we because of the emotions that drive us, and we then use logic to justify these decisions. That is just human nature. 6. If you can show that what you want them to do is what other people who are like them also did, they are much more inclined to do it. Even better, if you can show them that people who have what they want did the same thing that you want them to do, they will be eager to do it too. 7. If you can create a perception of authority, they will be much more inclined to follow your suggestions. One example of that would be if you can show that you have been published in the media and established yourself as an expert. Another kind of proof of authority is an academic title, or impressive clothing. You have now learned 7 secrets of mind manipulation. None of them is revolutionary or mind-blowing. But combine these elements together and you get a powerful method to influence and manipulate other people's minds. For more detailed instructions and mind control techniques, visit www.conversationalcoercion.com and grab your exclusive copy of the Conversational Coercion Crash Course while it's still free.
All right, I thought that was very interesting. And you know, I've seen people like, all right, there has been people in the media, and by the way, you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. We do welcome your comments, your questions, and of course through your calls. But for example, Draymond Green, I think is his name, the NBA basketball player that was given a press conference. He played for the Golden State Warriors, who are favored to win the NBA championship. And he was given a press conference with one of his teammates. And while his teammate was speaking, he just zoned out. Has that ever happened to you where, you know, you you are in a room full of people, and then you start thinking about something so deeply that you become, you get this zombie-like expression on your face, like you have zoned out. But he was aware of his surroundings, because when his teammate mentioned his name, you know, he responded. He, you know, he came out of his trance-like state, but he probably was just in deep thought about something, and he looked. But all these people on the internet want to talk about MK Ultra, mind control, and all this. What that is, MK Ultra is a real CIA program run by the U.S. government, experimenting with LSD to control people's minds. But, you know, we want to automatically take things to the extreme. And that's why, you know, people then start questioning your credibility, because everything is a conspiracy theory, or everything involves some kind of, complex plot. Why would somebody, you know, control Draymond Green's mind, and why would he spacing out for a matter of about maybe 4 or 5 seconds in deep thought make you put out videos about, oh, this is the government controlling Draymond Green's mind? No. See, we want to take it to an extreme, and we want to ignore the real simple techniques that have been proven to work that we don't even realize is being used against us. Again, I'm not talking about everybody. You know, everybody's mind do not work the same way. Everybody has not done the research and the different things. They may not be even aware of these threats. They just haven't been exposed, you know, to these things. And so, you know, certainly through music, you can put suggestive things in there, especially in your hook. The hook is, you know, repetitive. They call it the chorus also. And I mean, if it's planting an ideal into your mind, and that ideal is suggesting that you take action, you know, it'd be interesting to do a study to see what percentage of people will actually begin to speak in or act in a manner of the music. If we could do a study like that, you know, where we isolate individuals and you know, just feed them different stimuli in the form of music and lyrical content, and then see, you know, I bet you, you know, some of the subtle things of whether those people will be irritable, you know, in their daily actions with others, you know, don't antisocial and what have you, or whether they will be pleasant, you know, good morning and how was your day and all this and that. I'm telling you, this is proven. This isn't some eureka moment Scotty Reed has had. Plenty of people have been doing this research for decades. I'm just aware of it and have studied it. So, you know, everything isn't always so blatant, and you know, it could just be in subtle ways, but at the same thing, at the, you know, but still the outcome is the same, and that is the manipulation of our minds. So I want to move on. I don't see that we have any questions or comments. Again, today is the 48th anniversary of Dr. King's Poor People's Campaign and March that was scheduled to take place on May the 12th, 1968, and it ran through June the 24th in Washington, D.C. Dr. King, of course, was assassinated the prior month on April the 4th, and a lot of people, I think there is evidence to suggest, you know, on so many, well, the U.S. government had a number of reasons to take out Dr. King. He was a very influential figure, not just here in the United States, but throughout the world. He was given authority in titles and whatnot, Reverend, had a Nobel Peace Prize and what have you, not to suggest that he was under the control of anybody else or what have you, but the masses do are attracted to those things, and they do work on them like that. All right, but He used his position, his title, his celebrity to focus on the issue of global violence being spread by the United States through the military-industrial complex. He spoke out against war shortly prior to his death. He talked about all these people living in poverty. He talked about the racism of the government in providing white people, peasants, if you will, with land, free college, low interest loans to buy equipment to learn how to farm, and then turn around and give them welfare checks not to farm, subsidies not to farm. They continue to this day. But then want to tell, like he said, and this language is still used today, want to tell a black man he ought to pull himself up by his bootstraps and whatnot. So in observation, again, because we covered this last week and made people aware that this anniversary was coming up, you may not even be aware of it because, you know, corporations control 95% of what you see, read, and hear on television. So, but this is Dr. King. It was uploaded to YouTube. I'm going to go ahead and claim usage under fair use since we're reporting. But this is what got Dr. King killed. And also the reparations piece. You don't often hear Dr. King tied to the reparations movement. But when, you know, what else was he talking about when he say we come to Washington, D.C. to get our check? When he points out how, you know, all the white peasant class, you know, the honorary whites, in order to give them their privileged status, they were provided with all these free goodies and whatnot that came at somebody else's expense. So without further delay, this is Dr. Martin Luther King speaking on these very things.
I know all of you are studying hard and you're just doing fine in school, and I'm glad to see you.
In the last 2 months of his life, Dr. King faced the idea that civil rights alone could not solve the problem of poverty.
All right, I'm going to stop it there because that YouTube video is very low and I forgot. Let me see if I can increase the audio on it. I'm going to have to work with it.
In Mississippi today.
Okay, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Started over. I apologize.
I know all of you are studying hard and you're just doing fine in school, and I'm glad to see you.
In the last 2 months of his life, Dr. King faced the idea that civil rights alone could not solve the problem of poverty.
In Mississippi today.
Okay, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
He roamed the South trying to gain support for Poor People's Campaign. Its goals: full employment, a guaranteed income, and decent housing for every American.
People just don't know, but it's really hard. Not only me, it's so many more in the same shape. I'm not the only one. It's just so many of us right around. It's just no hair, shoes, clothes. It's naked and hungry. Part time you have to cook your and pinto beans morning, dinner, and supper. They don't know what else to get a good meal.
You all are really to be admired. And I want you to know that you have my moral support. I'm going to be praying for you. I'm going to be coming back to see you. And we are going to be demanding when we go to Washington that something be done, and done immediately, about these conditions. Yes.
This was a different Martin Luther King. Just weeks before his murder, in tones suggestive of the Black Panthers, he began to talk about how the government had broken its promise to the newly freed slaves just after the Civil War.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington, in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
All right, we're going to stop it there. then, you know, shortly afterwards, Dr. King was assassinated. You know, just to give some historical context here, he was talking about, you know, the Civil War period, and they refused to give, you know, black people any land. And specifically, we're talking about enslaved Africans, all right? Refused to give them any land, didn't do the 40 acres in the mule, but Andrew Jackson had no problem taking more land away from Native Americans and giving it to white Europeans. And the majority of those, and I would say today, the majority of white people classified as white in this racist system today, they do not trace their roots back to the founding of this country, to the colonies or anything like. No, they came over here in the 1800s fleeing the potato famine in Ireland and other impoverished conditions in Europe and what have you. But here in America, the U.S. government was willing to give these people opportunity, investment in the people through free college, low interest loans to mechanize their farm, education, what have you, and free land, you know, and then for them to become taxpayers and what have you. But you have long denied that to the very people that built this country. This country wouldn't even exist if not for black people, and that's on so many levels, not just because enslaved Africans built it, but black colonists, without their participation in the American Revolution, so-called rebels were losing to British. This is all documented. This is stuff I study. Civil War, without the black troops, the Confederacy, we would be living in the Confederate States of America today if not for the black troops and those not in the U.S. Army, in the Union Army, but still assisted as guerrilla fighters, spies, and labor. You know, so much, but, you know, these people can come from Europe after all of that and just get free land, and then you don't do nothing for the enslaved Africans, nothing for the free black people who once again saved this country and what have you, and, you know, induce this terrible poverty that is still with us today. Now, of course, today still black people, other non-white people, I'm talking like Native Americans, especially those living on reservations and what have you, are again facing disproportionate levels of poverty, and nobody wants to, you know, help them. Nobody wants to pay what is owed to them in the form of reparations. All of this can be classified as reparations. So, you know, it's just a shame that Dr. King's dream in addressing poverty, where everybody had housing, everybody had a guaranteed income for those that can work, everybody got an education, oh, that dream just, you know, died with him. And then I hear so-called educated black folks today talking about, you know, people who want free tuition at public colleges, oh, y'all just want something for free. For those that want universal Medicare, oh, y'all just want something for free. They have no mind for the poor people whatsoever, no mind for what they have already paid. That's already been paid for by them or by their ancestors. The so-called live in the richest country on the face of the earth, which we know is monopoly wealth, but still all of this spending is going on, and it's probably worse today than it was in 1968 because we have a larger population today. And y'all know it's true that today we have a historic gap between the haves and have-nots, between those in poverty and those in the top 1% who control. I've heard figures, they might be higher than 80% of the wealth, 85% of the wealth. 1% of the people control 85% of the wealth, or it's in their hands. The rest of us are literally starving. The reports come out every day, but people want to ignore them. And today in Washington, D.C., since this is where that march took back took place on this date, or the campaign rather, the occupation of Washington, D.C. to bring attention and demand legislation to address the systemic institutional poverty in Washington, D.C. today. It's being reported that there are more homeless families than there are homeless single adults. Now, you think about that. Think about it. I've heard that there may be up to 500,000, 1 million, maybe as high as 2 million homeless vets on the street. Now, that's individuals. You know, they may be male, they may be female. Those are individuals. They will be counted as homeless adults. But we're talking about entire families are homeless now, right there in Washington, D.C., where they just had that black tie dinner event called, what was that, the Correspondence Dinner or Award, with President Obama and other people telling N-word jokes and what have you, while all of this poverty and suffering is going on. And to just keep it real, the poverty on this level, Dr. King knew it, and you should know it too. This is not something we can just address ourselves. Again, we're making demands of what is owed us in the first place. But this is not just about becoming, all of us, or as many as possible, becoming entrepreneurs so that we can hire black people and give them jobs and then circulate black wealth. Man, that's like a 30-year plan, you know. When we're right now at a historic point after the 2008 crash, where historic amounts of black wealth was wiped out. And then we're counting our wealth in the form of housing ownership, and now we got all these homeless people. So we ain't talking about no 35-year plan that's not going to pull 40 million plus people out of poverty. No, you know. Yes, each individual should be looking after themselves, but again, each individual doesn't have the wherewithal nor the resources and no one to show them how to address these issues. And then a lot of it is geographical. You can't fish, you know, for your dinner if you live in an urban jungle. You can't hunt for your, unless you're going to eat some possibly rabid squirrels that's been surviving off of garbage or eating rats or whatnot. So it's just a shame. It's just a shame that, you know, when we look through the lens of history, just back to 1968 at this campaign for poor people, and it's just, you know, been a war on the poor, to put it simply, put a war on the poor. And it's in many ways, not just cuts every year with, you know, bipartisan support from Democrats and Republicans of the SNAP program, of the WIC program, of education, closing schools, all that. You know, it's not just those ways that there is a war on the poor, but there, you know, all of this leads to slavery. That's the root of the system, is slavery. And yesterday, NPR, and we actually last night highlighted this on New Abolitionist Radio and talked about it for years, about, you know, not just the prison plantation, but the money they make off of you in jails. You know, again, pointing to Ferguson, what was exposed in the Ferguson report. And then, you know, Ferguson wasn't the first. So yesterday, you know, NPR did an interview with the author or representative of the organization that were talking about how the poor are targeted by sheriff's deputies, by the bail system, to prey upon them. And this is destroying lives, millions of people. And none of this is going to get changed by us simply meditating, unless we're getting millions of people to meditate and direct their energy at manifesting physical solutions and what have you. So, you know, no, it take activity in both the spiritual and the physical, the metaphysical and all of that. But ain't nothing gonna get done if it ain't no physical feet and hands to get the task done. But I just want to listen to the first 5 minutes or so of this report from NPR about another way the poor in America are being attacked.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In America's ongoing debate about the criminal justice system, city and town jails get relatively little attention, even though there are nearly 12 million admissions a year, and that's nearly 19 times the admissions to state and federal prisons. As a 2015 report put it, jails are incarceration's front door. That report documents how jails have become warehouses for people too poor to pay even low bail and for people who are mentally ill, creating a downward spiral for those who are confined, as well as for their families and communities. My guest, Nancy Fishman, co-authored that report on the misuse of jails. She's the project director on sentencing and corrections at the Vera Institute of Justice. She's also working with police, judges, prosecutors, and defenders to create fairer, more effective local justice systems through a project called the Safety and Justice Challenge, in which the Vera Institute and the MacArthur Foundation are partners. The project is funding 20 jurisdictions to help them develop effective ways to help keep people out of jail who don't belong there and to more effectively reintegrate people into the community after they're released from jail. Nancy Fishman, welcome to Fresh Air. Let's start with what the difference is between jail and prison, because I think a lot of people are confused about that.
I think you're right. I think it isn't actually something that's in common parlance. So a prison is either a state or federal facility that houses people who have been convicted of crimes. A local jail is a little more complex. Jails hold primarily two groups of people, those who are serving short sentences, usually a year or less, someplace it's longer, and those who are being held prior to, it's called pretrial, but prior to any kind of disposition on their case, a plea, a finding of guilty by a jury or a judge. Jails also sometimes hold detainees for the Immigration Detention Service. They're sort of people who are awaiting hearings on violations of probation, but basically the major populations are the pretrial population and the short-sentenced population. The other thing to know is that jails are, for the most part, funded entirely locally by county and municipal governments.
Why are you focusing on reforms in jails?
Well, it's interesting. I think most people don't pay a whole lot of attention or haven't traditionally paid a whole lot of attention to jails. I think there's been increasing attention at the national level, in particular, to the need for state and federal sentencing reform, particularly around issues like mandatory minimum, some of our harsher drug laws that were passed in the 1990s, and jails have been sort of under the radar, but the reality is that jails have impacted a huge number of Americans in a lot of ways, many more than are impacted by state prisons. So in any given year, between 600,000 and 700,000 people are admitted to state and federal prison. There are almost 12 million admissions to local jails in a given year. That's admissions and not individuals. We estimate that represents about 9 million people, but that's a lot of people. So people who never see the inside of prisons at the federal or state level are passing through jails. And that pass through jails is damaging.
Are there typical reasons why people land in jail?
Well, I think that, you know, the one thing that we know about people in jail versus people who get, for example, arrested or stopped by the police who don't end up in jail is that the people who are in jail don't have the money to pay bail. So most of the folks passing through jail, most of the admissions to jail are for low-level offenses. They're not for serious and violent offenses. There are people in jail who are being held for more serious crimes, but the vast majority are for nonviolent property, sometimes drug misdemeanors, local level violations. People end up in jail primarily and stay in jail primarily because they don't have the money to pay bail.
Let's talk about the function bail is supposed to serve.
Sure.
So, I mean, what is that function?
The irony of bail is that its initial purpose was to make it possible for people to get out of jail, right? That you couldn't be held in jail without a finding of guilt or prior to a finding of guilt without having an opportunity to get out. But the irony is that now bail really functions to hold people in. And in places where bail is in a lot of jurisdictions, it's mandatory that bail be set. But if they don't want you to get out, they set, you know, multi-million dollar bail. But the challenge is, this means that if you have money to pay bail, you can get out no matter how dangerous you are. Whereas if you're poor and all you've committed is a traffic violation, which is one of the biggest drivers, frankly, of jail admissions in most places, you're going to sit in jail because $500 is a lot of money to you. And I think that that's one of the great travesties, frankly, of jail admissions right now, is that we have people sitting in jail for long periods simply because they can't afford to pay.
And does that create a kind of spiral of debt?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of places, particularly in some of the smaller jurisdictions, there's a huge network or a huge burden, frankly, of fines and fees that are associated with a jail stay or with any passage through the court system. This is something that's relatively new and has grown and grown in a lot of places. So people, in addition to having to pay bail, they also they're assessed a cost for their housing. So it's as if they're in a hotel, so there's a daily rate that they're responsible for. They will have to pay the cost of any lab tests associated with their case. They will have to pay the cost of drug testing. If they apply for a public defender, a lot of places actually have a fee. You have to actually pay money to apply for a public defender who you get because you can't afford to be represented. There are other costs. People get referred into programs, drug treatment programs, or they're required to be drug tested when they're out. They have to pay for those. They will often have to pay for the cost of probation supervision. And so you're talking about people who often come in fragile economic situations and end up that much worse by the time they get out.
All right, I want to stop it there as we're about 12 minutes over the broadcast, but I mean, Ferguson, that's everything we've seen in the documentaries and the reports on Ferguson, everything she talked about. Sandra Bland came to mind, unable to afford bail to get out. Next thing you know, she's dead in a jail cell. I mean, there are perhaps thousands of Sandra Blands and many, many others who, you know, unjustly are forced by this capitalist system. Again, you know, the first notation I've heard of capitalism or a form of it was Thomas Jefferson talking about in his memoirs about how he can increase his capital or his wealth by how many enslaved African babies was born on his plantation. I think he found something like a 4% increase in his wealth. So, you know, again, today we just want to recognize the anniversary of Dr. King's Poor People's Campaign and how that campaign has been abandoned today. And it's actually been the exact opposite, a war on the poor. And then also, you know, the psychological, looking at, you know, me just observing some of the comments I hear from people on radio programs, whether they're callers, whether they're talk show hosts, whether they're on television or whatnot. And now, you know, if you come up with an ideal of, you know what, I already pay taxes and all this, you know, I pay taxes, I pay sales taxes, I pay property taxes. My children, or perhaps my father, or even I have served in the military. And, you know, this is supposed to be the wealthiest country on earth. And, you know, I shouldn't be ridiculed because I'm proposing that we have, you know, universal health care, Medicare for all or Medicaid for all or free tuition at public colleges and universities. They are called public and college universities because they being taxpayer supported in the first place. You know, and then people tell me, well, how are we going to pay for these things? Well, somehow they scraped up billions of dollars, and I'm hearing now over Newswire that the Obama administration, with, of course, the blessings of Congress and working with Congress, have come up with the largest multi-billion dollar aid package to Israel in history. Israel's already getting $1 billion annually, whether that's in the form of military weaponry, whether that's in the form of cash assistance, whatever form is taken, it's costing U.S. taxpayers $1 billion a year. Now I'm reading that, you know, they about to get a record-breaking aid package, but nobody's saying about Israel or any other nations that's getting billions of dollars, which are really just bribery to corrupt the officials in those countries and what have you. But nobody's saying, well, how are we paying for that? Nobody's calling for an accounting. I shouldn't say no one, but very few. But I've heard no one talk about, well, how are we going to pay for these wars? When Hillary Clinton talking about, you know, we got to continue to overthrow Syria solely for the benefit of Israel. She said this in her emails. Nobody's asking how you gonna pay for that, but somebody talks about Medicaid, universal health care for everyone, talks about free public tuition, free college. They still got to pay for their books and other stuff, but just the tuition right there. Nobody's, you know, man, it's just crazy. It's illogical how the human mind works when you sit back and you just listen to some of the things that people say because they have, you know, a political motivation, and which then exposes them, because normally you think this is a logical thinking person. But then when they take such an illogical position, then you start questioning their motives for taking an illogical position. So then that tells me then this person is dishonest. This person is a liar, and they're not to be trusted. That lets me know right then and there. That's the only way I can explain it, because I refuse to believe people go to college for 4 years, get a degree, or however long they go, and, you know, that obviously doesn't equate to a logical thinking person. They may know whatever the discipline it is that they trained in, but when it comes to other matters, you know, they don't make any sense. Ben Carson is a perfect example of that. Top-notch, world-renowned brain surgeon. But when it comes to matters of slavery, matters of, you know, social issues, you know, this dude is acting like he on LSD or something. We're wondering, how is his mind working? We just abandoned the poor. And I've even heard a right-wing Christian black man say, use an excuse to say what the Bible say. Jesus say the poor gonna always be with you, as to suggest that text is telling him to, oh, don't worry about them, they always gonna be there. So no matter how you try to help people, no matter the social safety net that you will erect, no matter how you do the things you commanded to do, the poor gonna be with you. So, you know, why even try to eliminate poverty? Why even try to eliminate homelessness? It's really pathetic. And then we look today at homeless families surpassing homeless adults in Washington, D.C., the headquarters of USA Inc. And then just last week they had black tie events where the champagne was flowing, the filet mignon, whatever these exotic dishes that cost a whole lot of money, people laughing and joking about the N-word and whether President Obama is a nigger or not, my nigger, and if that's appropriate, and all these homeless people out there in the street, all these homeless families, you know what? They ought to go ahead and set up a tent city. You know, if they're unable to purchase tents or whatnot, somebody in that area, go ahead and start a fund to buy these people tents and what have you, and let's, you know, set up a tent city and let them go stay in front of the White House. I don't see many images or whatnot about the Poor People's Campaign in March that took place in 1968. Perhaps I haven't looked hard enough, but I don't see those images being promoted. Those people were there from May the 12th to June. Let me take a look at my notes. June the 24th. That's a month and a half. That's a month and a half. That's a month and 12 days, nearly 2 weeks. So, yeah. Well, what do you think they were doing? Where were they staying? I'm sure, you know, they didn't have the money to go stay up in the Hyatt Regency or the hotels or whatnot. I don't know. And I ain't saying this to antagonize anyone, but just to simply to make us think about things. But, you know, the Million Man March, the second one and whatnot, when all these people traveled and stayed in hotels and gave the money right back to the enemy. And I do understand the importance of coming together, but it's more strategic to come together on a local level. And with today's technology, you can link in people from all around the country and put everybody on video. I mean, come on, y'all. Come on. The connections are more important on a localized community level as opposed to millions of people, you know, attending an event on the Washington Mall in front of all these idols and monuments to white supremacists. Just a thought, not to criticize anyone, just an observation, just a thought, because we need to, quote unquote, refine our tactics and what have you. But I wonder what those people were doing. But since we have so many homeless families and adults in Washington, D.C., you know, perhaps those activists out there in that area should demonstrate and do a reenactment of the Poor People's Campaign in Washington, D.C. Let them stay there. And then we can, you know, send food, what have you, whatnot, until we get the legislation. See, we don't do it like that anymore. We don't make any demands of the system that is, whether you want to admit it or not, is controlling all of your movement, all of your activity. It's taking from you, literally. You paying taxes, come on. You buy gas, you paying taxes. You buy food, you paying taxes. You buy clothes, you paying taxes. Try not paying taxes. You own property, you paying taxes. Try not paying taxes. You got an automobile, you paying taxes. Try not. They taking it from you. And so, you know, there's this story about the unstoppable force meets the immovable object. But it's like I hear suggestions that people just move. They are the movable object. So what happens when an unstoppable force, as some people describe the racist system as being unstoppable? I'm not one of those who believe that, but certainly has a lot of power in having its way right now around the planet. But when that kind of force meets a movable object, then what do you think? They're gonna push us right into the grave, right into slavery. In fact, they've never stopped. Only reason we're breathing is because our bodies are capital and they're providing profit and jobs for someone. And today is a little bit more complicated. It's not just black and white, because now we got black cops, prison guards, wardens, CEOs of USA Inc. And they still engaging and presiding over that same system of slavery. So to explain that, we call it proxy racism. So anyway, let me see if there is anything I am forgetting, but shout out to those brothers and sisters, regardless of their ethnicities, religious or whatever classifications, who turned out back then and was, you know, ready to be led by Dr. King to get reparations and to get resources that are owed, still owed to black people. This country wouldn't exist as a nation without the black man and his gun on the battlefield. You know, so much is owed. And then for hundreds of years of racial discrimination, even if it's been eliminated from the law books and the code, it's the implementation and no accountability and how people are targeted. But all of it is wrong. So, but shout out to those people who turned out all those years ago, starting on this date, May the 12th. And I'm sure there was a tribute and an honoring of Dr. King. And here we are today, and that message is needed more than ever. Because the more poor people you have, the more unstable your country is. That's, you know, because it all leads to violence and crime. People are not just going to lay down and die for you or whatnot. They're just not going to do it. You had to come up with more elaborate mind control through the music to get them to kill themselves. But, you know, most right-thinking people are not just, you know, regardless of their economic situation, they just not going to commit suicide. They not going to stop eating. And see, that just leads to insecurity for everyone. You can't keep hoarding and taking everything, so few people taking so much, and there's nothing left for the masses. That has led to revolutions. It's just common sense, man. History always repeats itself. So it's like people don't learn from that history. Recognize the fact that you do live behind enemy lines of USA Inc. If you live anywhere on this planet, you are behind those enemy lines. It's a battlefield out there, and you need to really, really believe that and make sure that you're taking precautions that you don't become a casualty. That, you know, there's no guarantees. Bombs can just drop from the sky and kill you. And so no matter what kind of codification you was practicing, no, however you was dressed or whatever, nothing can stop you from, you know, bombs that's just dropped on you and what have you. But, you know, you can take precautions so that you're not killed by enemy soldiers out there. And, you know, it just starts with just simple awareness and being around, aware of your surroundings at all time, whether you in public or whether you at home. You know, I look out my windows. I walk around the house. You know, I just do not sit in my house lost in television or lost in this radio program. I take opportunities to look out the window and be aware of what is going on down the street, up the street, in the backyard, in front of the house, and all that. So you should conduct yourself like that. You know, when I go to Walmart or anywhere, I need to go post office, whatever, I'm looking always aware of the characters, the people around me. I'm checking them out, see if they got any unusual bulges and whatnot. And, you know, it's just being on high alert. And, you know, if you live on the battlefield, you should be always at the highest alert. All right. Till tomorrow. Peace and blessings to all. Oh, before I close out, Tendo Radio Show is not on air today. Dave had to attend the event, and I guess there was no guest host that could step in, so we're gonna go ahead and end the broadcast. But at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time tonight on May 12th, Blacks in Business Radio will be on air. And they will be talking about trade shows and, you know, having to do with business and why the advantages and disadvantages of going to trade shows and what have you. So again, that's a program that focuses on the entrepreneur spirit among us. All right, till tomorrow, peace and blessings to all. This is Scotty. I'm out.